Welcome to the Lifeway Student Ministry Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Trueblood. With me today is John Paul Basham.
Yo!
And we are here to talk about a very important student ministry topic. We're going to talk about numbers today. Numbers are something that every student ministry leader deals with at some level. There's been a lot of frustration about this topic. People line up on both sides of this issue. And so we're going to have some good discussion on how to have a healthy view of numbers, how to set some good goals. And so that's where we're headed today. But before we do that, I wanted to draw attention to one thing, and that's the ratings and reviews for podcasts. So first of all, thanks for listening. We've had a great response and great feedback to this podcast. And so I want to thank all of you, the listeners, for tuning in and making this an exciting thing for us as we record all the time to hopefully give you content that is usable and valuable for a student ministry leader at any level. And so I want to read to you one of the rating and review that we have. It's by Jay Watford 90. And he says, I have a smaller youth group, 15 to 20 kids on average, and everything discussed can be used in all sized groups. They don't discuss how much you should pay your middle school interns or how to lead your 50 volunteers. They discuss ideas that are crucial to the entire church. This podcast has been a great resource for me. So thanks, Jay Watford 90, for the positive rating and review. Gave us 5 stars.
Yeah.
So Jay Watford, you're the man.
We love, or woman, I guess.
Or woman.
We love the 5-star ratings. So if you could be so kind as to head over to iTunes and leave us a positive rating and review, we sure would appreciate it. When you get those reviews, that's what helps people searching on iTunes find the podcast. So thanks in advance for doing that. And on with the topic. So let's dive right in. John Paul, we mentioned we're going to be talking about numbers today. And I think there's a healthy way to look at numbers and a healthy way to set goals, as well as an unhealthy one, just like in any topic that you would find. I would say personally, in my own life, I kind of started with an unhealthy view of numbers. Was in situations where I kind of let those numbers and the goals and all of those weigh me down really heavily, and had a bad experience with that. A lot of immaturity on my own part and how I reacted to that kind of situation. And over the years of leading student ministries in local churches, this issue has been in every church I've served at some level. I don't think you can get away from numbers. So even as I have conversations with student pastors, they sometimes say, man, I just want to go to a place where numbers don't matter. Well, you're never going to be at a place, because they matter at some level everywhere.
Right.
So I'll start off by giving an unhealthy example. And again, I would say a lot of immaturity on my part. And so that, for me, that's the majority of the unhealthy example that I would have. I believe I looked at numbers the wrong way. I allowed numbers and how our ministry was growing and how many people were here at this event versus this year versus this event last year. And I really started off in ministry kind of identifying myself with those numbers, my value as a youth pastor and as a leader based on what the spreadsheet said. And so for me, that's one of the things that I really, really struggled with over the years. And I know that I've talked to student ministry leaders across the United States that have felt the same way. And one of the things that always comes up is, man, my pastor really just wants numbers. That's all they want. That's all they talk to me about. And then the conversation launches in from there. What do you tell a student pastor that's saying, man, my pastor, all he cares about is the number, and I just am having trouble dealing with it?
Well, I mean, I guess part of that discussion, something that we talked about even just leading up to this podcast, and what are the values tied to any motivation behind numbers?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, and I think that you always did a good job of tying that to mission. You know, we want to grow You know, set a goal. We want to grow by a certain number of small groups. You know, if you've got 10 small groups, hey, over the course of this next year, it'd be great if we grew by 5 small groups. You know,
yeah.
That sets a certain metric goal for how many leaders you need to recruit to be able to accommodate those groups. It sets a metric for how many students you would be, you know, bringing into gatherings. You know, there's always kind of the law of averages for how many are going to come and how many are going to stick and what you're doing. You know, there's so much working backward from saying I have a goal for 5 new small groups. I think the key there is, it's like you said, are you finding your worth in whether or not you hit those, that goal? If you have 3 small groups,
yeah,
and that's another 10 kids and another 3 to 5 leaders. Well, another 10 kids per group.
Right.
And another 3 to 5 leaders across those small groups, those environments. I mean, there's a lot of life change that's going on, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. For me, it goes back to what you said, and I appreciate you saying that about tying numbers to the mission. Full disclosure, John Paul and I served together here at Lifeway. We also served together in the local church prior to coming to Lifeway out in Virginia, where we served together. But I think one sign of having an unhealthy view of numbers is when the numbers are talked about more than the mission. If you hear about numbers more, and seems to be this separation between the numbers and what the numbers stand for, the numbers and what the end result is going to be, or the mission of the church, and we accomplish this mission by having this many people at this, or recruiting this many people, or whatever those goals are, they've got to be tied to the mission. And if they're not, then I think that's when you might be able to evaluate the situation you're in and say, okay, we might have an unhealthy view or an unhealthy practice of what numbers are. And I've been fortunate to serve in a lot of places where people did a good job and modeled for me what healthy numeric accomplishments look like.
So how do you think that fleshes out, you know, both sides of the coin? You know, for a student pastor that's talking to a room full of volunteers, whether that's 5 volunteers or 50 volunteers,
yeah,
casting that vision, saying, these are some goals that I feel like the Lord's leading me to set, this is how I want to get there. Or the student pastor that's sitting there with a staff saying, this is where I feel like the Lord is leading me to lead you guys to accomplish this, you know, and that message trickling down to the volunteers. How do you think that fleshes out? How do you, as the leader, show the importance of setting the goal, the numerical goals, while also tying that to, this is the work of the Lord that we are striving to do with all of our might, you know, with all of our intellect, with all of our ability? How do you tie that together, and then how do you communicate it?
Yeah, I think you can do it. I think it fleshes out in 2 ways. One, it forces the leader to be much more strategic on the front end. So you can't stand up in front of people, whether it's a staff or a volunteer team or the 3 other people that you lead ministry with in your church. You can't get up in front of them as the leader and say, all right, here's the goals, let's move on. Or an unprepared, this is what we're going to try to accomplish this year. It causes the leader to get by themselves with God's word and pray and really seek the Lord on, as the leader, what he wants to accomplish this year. And I really do believe that when leaders do that, that God will give them some direction, and God will begin to lift up areas of the ministry. Now, you might not open your eyes from praying and there be a number burned into the desk that you were praying over, and that's the number you go after. Like, that may not be the way it is, but I really believe that God will begin to lift up areas of ministry that need to be a special focus over a certain period of time. And from then, I think there is an element of this, of ministry, that God wants. You mentioned, you know, serving God with all of our intellect, where God wants to show us, you know, focus here, but then leaves us to, not leaves us, but wants to see us work and wants to see us put our mind to that specific area. So if that area of ministry is your small group discipleship and you really feel like God is raising that area of ministry up, then what that looks like and how it fleshes out is you getting by yourself and saying, okay, if I'm supposed to focus here, then how can we get more students exposed to small group discipleship this year in our church? What does the curriculum look like for us to really focus in? What does the training and the volunteer recruitment look like for us to really dial in and focus on small group discipleship? And once you have a basic framework there, then I think the second way it can flesh out is for you to get with your volunteer team, whether that's, again, like you said, 5 or 50, and to get with your staff team, and then begin to flesh out more of those goals. And when you do that, it begins to create a piece of ownership. So you could have all the goals and set all the goals and go to your team and say, this is where we're going, and tie it to mission, and that's okay. Or you could also get the framework and then go to your team and flesh out the rest of it into the details with your team. If you serve at a larger church and you have a high number of volunteers on your volunteer team, maybe that's grabbing 5 to 10 of those volunteers and working with a leadership team of volunteers inside of that larger group to help flesh out those goals. But either way you do it, you begin to create ownership around the goals. Everybody understands the mission, why we're doing it. So we're not just saying, man, let's have 12% growth in small groups this year.
Yeah, just a blanket number.
Yeah, well, okay, but why? Why are we at? Well, because we want to see more students discipled by our church. We want to see more students plugged into community and doing life together. Because as I was praying and reading through scripture, God brought this passage to mind, and that led me to believe that our small group ministry and discipleship is going to be the main focus for us this year. Or however it is that it happens to you, articulating that really, really well. So for me, that's how it fleshes out in those two ways.
I think another thing to think about in communicating those numbers too is something that we talk about a lot. When we're training student pastors and how to train their volunteers and how to cast vision for their ministries, is just communicating those wins.
Yeah.
So something that's always been helpful for me, as I'm setting a numeric goal, any kind of a metric like that, someone that is very much trying to learn to be a visionary thinker and a visionary leader but doesn't really know where to start, can start with a metric, you know. And so, like you said, praying over those goals, where do I feel like the Lord is leading me, boiling that down to a metric. You know, when you say, okay, let's say 12% is the number. So we want to grow by 12%. Well, what does that look like? Some of you just need to sit back and think through and dream about what your ministry looks like with whatever that number is that the Lord lays on your heart. If we're 12% more than we are now over the course of the next year, then how many more students is that? How many more students saved in your programs is that? How many more kids being discipled is that? How much more reach does that give you in the public schools that you're reaching? How many more maybe doors for opportunity in sports teams does that give you? How many more parents does that expose you to be able to disciple parents and bring them up and teaching their students? How many more leaders does that mean that you're going to need to go get for your ministry? And then, you know, there's just so much that you can go through and say, what if we grew by 12%? What if we grew by 5% and God did this and this and this and this and this? Those are things that I think you can legitimately take to your leadership, whoever it is that you're communicating to, and say, why don't you just dream with me?
Yeah.
What if God did this? And I think that in itself allows a team to bond over a direction and a vision and a goal and really a divine purpose, you know, and motivation to go get those kids.
Yeah, and it's an exciting thing. To be able to dream with a group of people is it's energizing. It gives you that mark where you can say, okay, let's get in the trenches this week and next week, and let's let's do this for the next 52 weeks of the year. It's something you have to motivate the leaders around you less when they also are excited about the same mission and goal that you are.
Yeah.
One thing that we have said over and over and over that I want to make sure our listeners hear is that you do need to set a metric. You do need to have a goal to shoot for. Shooting for no target and no goal, you'll hit nothing, right?
Don't wing it.
Yeah. And so the goal is important. The caution is don't define yourself by the goal. Ultimately, all of these things, God brings the increase. He is the one who brings salvation and growth and more people come into the church. And that's not a cop out to do nothing. And the other side of that is true. You can go to extremes on both ends of that where you say, well, God's in charge of the increase, so I don't need to set goals and I don't need to do anything. And the other side of that is, man, I'm going to define myself by my goals. And both of those are unhealthy.
Yeah.
The other thing I would say about this topic, and I've learned this the hard way, is that the senior pastor, your pastor, needs to be involved in your goals, in how you're talking about your goals, the language you're using, the goals you're setting. So the same meeting that you have with your volunteer leader or leader team or staff team, that same conversation in articulating what you believe God has put on your heart as the goals, the areas, and how you're going to get at those numbers, your senior pastor needs to hear that same presentation. There needs to be a moment where you get on his calendar and you sit down with him and say, this is what I'm thinking for this next year. Help me understand how this can fit into your vision for the whole church. Help me understand, am I off here? Would you like to see something different? I've found that when your senior pastor knows your goals and sees a plan with it, he will be far less likely to be on your back about it throughout the year because he knows that you have taken the initiative to think through it. The other side of that is also true. If your pastor is constantly on you about these things, then it may be an indication that you are not communicating up and leading up enough to where he feels comfortable to leave you alone.
Yeah. And also there's the discussion of, you know, ultimately your pastor is the person that God has entrusted with the responsibility of leading that body.
Yeah.
And you're part of that body.
And that includes the students. Right.
Right.
Yep.
So, you know, goal number one for you is to make sure that you know what your pastor's vision and desire for the church is. And I think Ben's absolutely right. You know, as you continue to pray and you continue to seek the Lord, God may give you a vision that maybe is outside of what the church has done so far. And so those are some of those conversations when you go to the pastor and say, this is what God is really laying on me. How can we partner and make this fit what we're doing? There's also, I think, the conversation that maybe should happen before that, if it hasn't happened already, of just, Pastor, I want to make sure that I know where you want to go. Because your job, number one, is to serve his vision for the church. So just saying, Pastor, I want to push forward your goals, your vision, you know, what God has called you to lead our church to do. And so what do you expect of me in that, you know? And so as I'm praying about what metrics I want to set, what goals I want to set, what vision I want to communicate to our leaders, the last thing you want to do is say, leaders, this is what we're going to do. And then the pastor catch wind of it and say, no, that's not what you're going to do, you know? And then you got to turn back around and say, sorry.
Yeah. How does this conversation play into the interview process? So let's take this numbers issue and say you are interviewing at a new place and you think God might be calling you to serve at blank church. How much do you talk about this issue and what the pastor's vision is for numbers, how they set goals, what they expect of you? What does that conversation look like?
Wow, I think that is a great question. Because the interview time is a time when you can really get a feel for the pastor's leadership style in the middle of all that. You know, so when it really gets down to it, talking about expectations, talking about, you know, where do you see this ministry going? What do you want me to do with this ministry? You can learn a lot, even in just asking some small questions of, well, what would my expectations be year over year for ministry growth? Or even just before that, Pastor, what is a win? If you were going to evaluate me 1 year from today, and I want to make sure that I am exceeding all expectations, what does that mean I've done? What does that mean the ministry looks like?
Yeah.
What does that mean people are saying about me? You know, I think you can learn a tremendous amount just from a few of those questions and find out real fast. You know, that pastor might say, if you don't grow by 10%, then I'm going to consider this a failing hire.
Yeah.
And then you can say, well, thank you very much for your time. And I feel like at this point, the Lord is leading me a different direction.
Yeah. Yeah. And some people would say, okay, I want that challenge. And I think the interview time, listen, if you're in a place right now where you're like, man, I want to get out of this place because the numbers focus is too intense, I just can't handle it, then to not have this conversation in the interview process, like, it's your fault in the next place. You know, you need to make sure and find what fits you and your leadership. And I would say even ask the question, is my own view of numbers a little skewed? And is that causing me to react differently to my situation than I would have? Like I mentioned, for me, I had a very unhealthy and immature attitude towards the things that were going on early in ministry as I served, where I thought, man, the only thing that matters is the number on the spreadsheet for our Sunday school classes, or the number on the spreadsheet for baptisms or whatever. And I reacted in an unhealthy way. I would say now, looking back, it's not that the church had an unhealthy view. It's that I did. And so maybe that's, if you're in that situation, there's two things. Make sure in the next place it's a fit before you go. Or maybe take some time to self-evaluate and say, am I falling into some of the traps that lead to bitterness? Like defining yourself along with the numbers and saying, well, I'm worthless because X didn't happen, or I'm great because X happened. Both are dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the flip side of that is it's also dangerous to say, I'm great because I don't care about numbers.
Yeah.
Because I think then that's the pendulum swinging all the way to the other end.
And for
you
sure.
Say, it has nothing to do with our effort. It has everything to do with what God is doing. And yeah, so hear me well. God is sovereign over everything. But he expects us to work as unto him. Mm-hmm. And so everything that we're doing, we're supposed to be doing with every amount of excellence that we can muster. So for us to say, oh, I'm not even going to think about the numbers, and then you say, well, I don't know why our church isn't growing. Well, that's because you're eating donuts and drinking coffee and just praying that God will do something. That's not going to work.
Yeah, it is. I've heard at an increasing rate, I don't want to think about the numbers. I don't care about the numbers. And that sounds really spiritual, and it sounds really on the surface, it sounds really spiritual and it sounds really good. But under the surface, I don't think it's spiritual at all. I don't think it's the right way to do ministry. I don't think it's a healthy way to do ministry, because when we're working as unto the Lord, like you mentioned, we should want to see more students involved in discipleship.
Yeah.
We should want to see more students come to know Christ and follow him in baptism. We should want those things. And if we want those things, then we'll plan for them.
Well, it's like when Paul tells Timothy, you know, he tells him, I want you to run the race with the intention to win.
Yeah.
We're not just jogging because we like cool headbands and tube socks.
Yeah.
You know?
Which, have you seen these running socks that are like knee-high,
no,
dressy, like they look like Argyle socks that you can wear. Anyway, it's ridiculous.
No, but I did meet somebody not too long ago that said because he doesn't like socks, he's just going to tattoo his whole leg an Argyle sock.
Both legs.
Just one.
Just one.
Yeah. One canvas is already spent.
That's the greatest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I told him that that was a fully wise decision.
That's a goal that you should not repeat, tattooing socks on your – then whenever you wear flip-flops or your sandal of choice, your socks guy.
Uh-huh. On the conversation of numbers.
Right.
Well, I don't know that I know where we were going, actually, on the conversation of numbers as it relates to socks.
Got totally derailed there, and that – and that's okay. But so let's dive back into the conversation and talking about if someone says, I don't want to think about numbers, I don't want to do numbers, kind of our reaction to that and saying, no, numbers are important. We should want growth. We should want, and you were mentioning Paul and Timothy.
That's right. So there's a level of tenacity that I think we are called to have about us as ministers of the gospel. There's an intentionality. There's a holy attitude that we should have at all times that says Jesus is coming soon, and so ...
Yeah.
I have to do this. I have to do this. I have to do this. It's not glorifying to the Lord to be lazy. It's not glorifying to the Lord to say, maybe this will happen, maybe this won't. What we're called to do is reach the nations to every corner, to every ethnos. And that doesn't happen when we say, well, I hope this goes well.
Yeah. Yeah. No, goals show intentionality. Goals show that you have a strategic plan. And then in the end, If you miss the goal, it gives you an opportunity to evaluate what happened. So say you are going to set a goal of growing by X number of small groups in the next year. Well, you know that in order to reach that goal, you have to have adult volunteers in order to lead those groups. You have to have adult volunteers to care for the students, lead the students, teach the students. You have to have that in place. Well, in order for that to be in place, you have to have a recruiting plan. You have to identify people to go after. You have to have a mission that you can articulate to them that shows them why they want to be on board and leading students. And there are all these steps that take place in order for you to be able to reach whatever goal it is that you set. And when a goal is missed, it's important that you don't say, well, I may as well quit and go hide in a hole because I'm a horrible youth pastor. That's not the right response. The right response is, okay, let's go back and look at every one of those steps on the checklist leading up to that end result. What are the things that happened? What didn't happen? How did it go wrong? And if you can check off all of those things and say, man, every measure that we had in place that would lead us to the end result that we wanted happened, it just didn't come through, then personally, I could lay my head on the pillow at night and say, man, we did everything that we could do. And for whatever reason, maybe God only gave us 4 instead of 5 new small groups this year, or whatever the result is. I could lay my head on a pillow at the end of the year and feel good about that. What I couldn't as if I go back and look at the plan and saw that it was something that looked awesome and sounded awesome in January, but in March, I forgot about it and everybody else forgot about it and we didn't pick it up again until evaluation time. And I realized that, oh, we didn't do all the steps that we said we were going to do. That's an execution problem. And so then it gives me a plan for the next year on what I need to accomplish, what I need to do, the work that I need to focus on.
And for some of you guys, this maybe sounds like a ton of work. There's a lot of, you know, as you kind of back up from that number goal, everything that it takes to hit that metric. Growth is not easy. Growth takes work. So it is a lot of work. But I would encourage you to do this. put it down on a page somewhere. It can be overwhelming when you start, you know, when you're laying in bed and you're about to go to sleep and you just start thinking, I got to do this, I got to do this, I got to do this, I got to do this. Some of those initiatives that you would like to undertake, sometimes because of staffing, sometimes because of resources, sometimes just because, hey, I've never done this before, can seem overwhelming. But when you put it down on a page and you say, okay, this is how I think I need to approach this, then two things happen. One, you give yourself some action steps that you can bite off one chunk at a time and start to work and whittle away at that process. The other thing is, once you've done the work initially to create all those processes, then when you evaluate how that all went at whatever it is, at the end of 2 months, 3 months, 6 months, a year, then you don't have to reinvent the wheel to improve the process.
Right.
You can say, okay, I laid out these 8 steps to try to reach this goal. Everything fell apart right around step 3 and went downhill from there. So how do I need to tweak 3? And then how does that influence the rest of those steps? And so from there forward, you've got a process, you've got a track to run on that you're tweaking, which is very minimal work, instead of every year saying, oh man, what do I do now?
Right. Yeah. And I would say, and get with other youth ministry leaders who have been doing it a long time. Ask them what their goals are, what their process looks like, how they do all of this. You are not on an island here. Get with people around you or other student ministry friends that you have and talk through these things. Contact us and have more conversation away from the podcast. We'd be glad to help in this area as well as any other area. We're here. You can reach us. Probably the easiest way is through Twitter, @studentministry. And then specifically, mine is @BenTrueblood, and John Paul's is @JohnPaulBasham. So we are easy to find on social media, so look us up. A couple of things that I want us to hit really quickly, because we've talked a lot about how to have a healthy view of numbers, and like maybe some of it's our fault if we feel like there's an unhealthy view of numbers. But the reality is there are some places where it's completely imbalanced. There's an unhealthy view of numbers from the leadership. And guys and ladies who are leading student ministries across the country really are in a horrible situation in regards to this issue. And they're struggling and they don't know what to do. What do you say to that person who's listening to this and they are legitimately struggling in a numbers-focused environment?
I mean, I think that it takes first and foremost a great deal of self-evaluation.
Yeah.
Your identity is not in being a student pastor. And one of the best things somebody ever said to me was exactly that. Your identity is not a student pastor. Your identity is a Christian. You
yeah.
are a Christian. You are in other words, a Christ follower. You get to do student ministry.
Yeah.
So a lot of times the frustration of that can melt away when you get your perspective right. When you find your whole identity in being a student pastor, and then you realize all the frustrations that can potentially come, and that will come with being in ministry because
yeah.
of the warfare that's going to come along with that.
Yeah, then there's going to be something.
Yeah. And at that point, when your identity is wrapped up in being a pastor, then that warfare is very much personal. Your
yeah.
life, your identity is being wrecked every time something doesn't go the way you think it should.
Yeah. Whether it's a conversation or a number or a goal, if that's your identity, every time something goes wrong, you're dead in the water.
Yeah. But the flip side of that is if you find your identity in Christ as a Christ follower and the thing that God has allowed you to do for him, to serve him, is fulfilling the role of pastor, then a lot of those expectations, a lot of those struggles, a lot of those challenges, even all the victories, sit in a very different place in your life.
Yeah.
And they interact with the rest of your world in a much healthier way. And so I think that would be the place to start, just to say, how do I view myself? Where do I place my value? This is like you said, your value should not be placed in whether or not you've grown. That should be a great standpoint of importance and strategery in the job that you do.
That's right.
But it shouldn't be, you know, I'm the world's biggest loser because, you know, our student ministry actually, you know, decreased by two this year.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I think it all starts with identity.
Man, that is good stuff. And we'll wrap up there. And as we do, I just want to give you, and John Paul and I will kind of go back and forth a little bit on, as we end with a super practical, here are some goals. If you're sitting there and you're saying, I have no idea where to start with what, with setting goals, like give me some areas of ministry that I can set or should set a goal in. I want to give you that as we kind of wrap up.
First step, number 2, Ticonderoga pencil.
Yes, that's right. No, like you're taking the ACT.
Uh-huh.
It's ACT season right now. So the 11th grade group of boys that I lead are all taking the ACT. And here's when I found out, like, I was in trouble leading this group. Is they're all, I was like, so how are you guys doing so far? 32, 33, 31. I was like, man. My 20s, not stacking up too well in this situation. So start with a pencil, get out a piece of paper, write down your goals. But here are some thoughts for the kinds of goals that you should set. You heard John Paul and I both mention it. The number of small groups that you have. So, set a goal this year, for increasing the number of groups that you have in your ministry. Another goal could be set a goal for the number of volunteers that you want to increase in your ministry this year. Whether you want to increase by 1 or 20 volunteers, the number of volunteers that you have is directly connected to the growth that you'll experience in your ministry. You will very rarely find a ministry that has outgrown in the number of students the number of volunteers that they have to support them. So groups, number of volunteers, baptisms, how many students you want to see baptized, how many students you want to see come to know Christ in your ministry. These are all areas that you can set a goal in, pray through, see if one of those fits in your context.
Yeah, and in setting those goals, you know, like with the volunteers, don't set a goal for what you need immediately. That's not a goal. That's a need.
Yeah, right.
So
if you have empty seats in groups or rooms with no leaders, filling those is not a goal.
Yeah, that's called an emergency.
Yes. Yeah, that's called ministry still needs to happen, and so I need to fill those. Cool. Well, thank you for listening to the Lifeway Student Ministry Podcast. We will see you next time. Before we go, though, make sure you stop by iTunes, look us up, leave a positive rating and review, and we'll love you for it.
Indeed.
See ya.